Multipod, der Podcast der Konrad-Adenauer-Stiftung über internationale Zusammenarbeit.
Welcome to a new episode of Multipod, the podcast of Konrad Adenauer Foundation on International Cooperation. Today we're in a conversation with Nicoletta Sapile, the Deputy Director of the Geneva-based NGO UPR Info. UPR Info raises awareness and provides capacity-building tools to different actors of the Universal Periodic Review process of the Geneva-based Human Rights Council. UPR Info works with member states of the United Nations, NGOs, national human rights institutions, civil society actors, parliamentarians, and journalists. Nicoletta is a journalist by training herself and has been with UPR Info since 2018. We also have Sarah Ultes with us today. Sarah is a research associate at the Multilateral Dialogue Geneva of Konrad Adenauer Foundation. In her work, Sarah covers, amongst many other areas, the discussions and developments surrounding human rights in Geneva. Nicoletta and Sarah, it's a pleasure having you both here today, and thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us, Christina.
Thank you, Christina.
I am Christina Bellman. I currently work as policy advisor for transatlantic relations in the Department of International and Security Affairs at the headquarters of Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Berlin. This is a new position for me, as frequent listeners might have noticed. And this change in position is also the reason why there has been a certain gap since the last Multipod episode. But I'm happy to announce that my dear colleague Marcel Schmidt, who is now policy advisor on multilateral dialogue, will come back with a Multipod from now onwards. Marcel, it's great that you're also here with us today.
Thank you, Christina, for having me and for establishing this Multipod. We will continue to have interesting guests from the multilateral sphere in the future, and I'm looking forward to host it. But for now, I'm happy to listen to today's talk. Thank you.
And I'm also really looking forward to the new episodes. But let's dive into today's topic. Nicoletta, we're having this conversation one day after Germany underwent its fourth UPR review in the morning of 9th November. Could you contextualize this a little bit more for us? First of all, what is the Universal Periodic Review, UPR in short, and where does it fit within the wider UN system, and why is this mechanism relevant to us?
So the Universal Periodic Review is a peer review process by which every member state of the United Nations is reviewed on their human rights commitments and obligations. And this review is made by other states. So if we break down the words, just to make it even more clear, it's universal because this process covers the 193 UN member states. And it's also very important because it follows an equal treatment for all the states. So all the countries follow the same rule and procedures when they engage in the UPR. It is periodic, meaning that the process is regular and predictable. And so we know when every state is going to be reviewed, and the review happens once every 4 years and a half, approximately. And finally, it's a review. That means that states make recommendations to their peers, to the other states, on how to improve the human rights situation. And as the UPR has as a basis the legal obligations that states have undertaken, we can address in this mechanism human rights issues that go from the civil and political rights, but also economic, social rights, and also emerging issues that we see, unfortunately, developing. The main goal of this process is really to improve the human rights situation in each country. And the UPR was created in 2006 to overcome the polarization that developed in the Human Rights Commission, that at that time was still, let's say, reflecting a bit the Cold War, dimensions. So by creating this human rights mechanisms, putting all the states at the following the same rules and procedures, the aim is to achieve a regular assessment of the human rights records of each country. Let's say that if we want to use a more visual image of it, is like every 4 years and a half, we take a picture of the human rights situation. And this picture has many different elements input by national actors. But it's also a mechanism that aims to share good practices among states. So states are encouraged to exchange their know-how on how to improve human rights. And they also can do that by formulating these recommendations. So that is a bit in a nutshell what is the UPR and how it was created.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for taking it apart one by one. I think now we all have a good understanding of what's the purpose of it, actually. It sounds very remarkable, especially when we consider the larger picture, and as you said, and also the current political dynamics, I would like to say. You said it's a peer review mechanism, and states are the ones that make the recommendations to each other, right? I imagine that this is also seen critically, say a weak point, so to say, of the mechanism. Sarah, let's bring you in. If there is one, what role do other stakeholders play in the process?
Yes, indeed. So states are indeed the ones who make the recommendations to each other, and states are also the one who form the so-called working group, which meets 3 times a year in Geneva and reviews 14 states in one session. So yes, states are the key actors when it comes to the review itself, but in the preparation for the review and also in the implementation phase which follows, there are various other stakeholders who play a key role. So these other stakeholders, they can range from civil society organizations, human rights defenders, to national human rights institutions, even trade unions, academia, faith-based organizations, indigenous groups, UN agencies, parliamentarians, you name it. So all of these actors, they have a crucial role to play at various stages of the UPR cycles. Maybe just to give you 3 short examples. So the basis of the review for each state is 3 reports, basically. So they form the basis, and 2 of the reports are informed by information from UN agencies and civil society. This is one report which is called the Compilation of UN Information. So this contains really information from UN agencies, special procedure mandate holders, so special rapporteurs, for instance, and also information from treaty bodies. This report is then compiled by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. And a second one is the so-called Summary of Stakeholder Information Report. And this contains specifically information from civil society organizations and national human rights organizations. And it's also compiled by the Office of the High Commissioner. Maybe as a second example, also beyond civil society and the UN agencies, I also mentioned and highlighted parliamentarians. This is also an interesting point to my mind, because they indeed have a really crucial role to play when it comes to implementing the recommendations the state accepted, when it comes to what we call lawmaking. And I also mentioned media. This is also not to be underestimated, because they have a crucial role in covering the process and raising awareness about it. So I would say the main problem is not that the process is exclusive to states, but that often other actors are less aware of their role they can play in the process. And I would say this is why also UPR Info exists, and wherefore we have also, in cooperation with UPR Info, started to offer trainings in Geneva for various stakeholders that I've mentioned before. And so we've, for instance, in the past, trained hundreds of journalists to cover the review of their respective states. And maybe one more point, if I may, what I can say for Germany, for instance, and specifically, civil society actually applauded the good cooperation with the government this time. So they had several consultation processes beforehand. For instance, the Forum Menschenrechte said they had a very frank exchange, and they also recommended issues which were taken up by the government. So also during the review in Geneva, they were welcome to sit on the same panel, and even there they continued their critical remarks, so which I think is not a given in many states.
Very interesting. So when we take these three reports, Sarah, that you now just referred to, that build the basis of the review, what would you say, Nicoletta? What were the main points of criticism or recommendations made to Germany before the review this time? And maybe related to that, since you have been following the process for years now, and you've probably studied the previous reports from 2009, 2013, and 2018 as well, could you evaluate these reports for us, please?
So, yes, in the reports that were submitted before the fourth review of the UPR of Germany came from a variety of civil society organizations. So I think we have approximately 36 reports that were submitted before the fourth cycle. And they address different issues, including, for example, children's rights, freedom of expression. Many issues were linked to ensuring gender equality, and for example, mentioning the reduction of the gender pay gap or the implementation of the Istanbul Convention that protects women and fights gender-based violence, and including domestic violence. We had reports also addressing migrants' rights and combating violent extremism and hate speech. Reports that were addressing issues linked to discrimination. So these were a bit the topics that were, let's say, mentioned in the reports. And of course, the more civil society organizations are engaged, and the more inputs we have on the human rights situations that then can be raised during the interactive dialogue among states, because then states use the reports from civil society along with the national report and the UN compilation report that Sarah has mentioned before. They use those reports to formulate relevant recommendations. If we look back and we do just an overview of how the thematics have changed from 2009 to 2018 and the last review, we can see that in the first cycle, many recommendations were, many reports were addressing the or asking, suggesting Germany to ratify international instruments, and they were focusing especially on women's rights, the rights of the children, and issues linked to justice. So regarding, for example, for the those who were addressing the we're suggesting Germany to ratify international instruments, we can see that in the following years, Germany has actually ratified, for example, the Convention for the Rights of People with Disability, or the optional protocol on the Convention of Children, which protects children and addresses especially the sale of children or prostitution. So those elements, Germany has also ratified, following these recommendations in the first and second cycle, the Convention Against Trafficking and the Istanbul Convention that I mentioned before. Whereas in the last, let's say, reports and the last two reviews, we see major attention on the thematics linked to racial discrimination. Migrants and racial discrimination, let's say that these are some topics that are addressed more than others, even though if women's rights remains in, let's say, the top five issues.
Very interesting indeed, thanks. You both followed the review very closely. What recommendations were actually taken up by states, and what was Germany criticized for? Maybe to you, Sarah.
First of all, Germany was present with a comparably huge delegation headed by Luisa Amtsberg, Germany's human rights commissioner, and several representatives from ministries. All in all, Germany received between 2 to 5 recommendations from a total of 124 state delegations. So when you sum this up, many more recommendations were being made this time. I think in the last cycle, Germany has received around 259 recommendations, from which it supported 209. But this follows a general trend that more recommendations are being made in recent years. Now, if I'm not mistaken, on the 15th of November, we will see a document with all the recommendations, also clustered by issue. This will be made available. But what we can say now already is that the recommendations that were being made were mostly in line with the reports that Nicoletta presented before. Some of the recommendations were going beyond that a bit, also taking up the current situation in Germany in light of the war between Israel and Hamas and Gaza, for instance, criticizing Germany for silencing pro-Palestinian voices. So maybe one of the top 10 snapshots that I found stood out or that were particularly often mentioned. As Nicoletta said, the main thing really was racial discrimination. So Germany was recommended to combat in parts systemic racism, hate speech online and offline, hate crime, xenophobia, discrimination, also stigmatization of LGBTIQ plus people. Germany was asked to counter ethnic profiling, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. And in this cluster also was recommended to provide human rights training to law enforcement officials and strengthen investigation and hold perpetrators to account. What came up particularly often as well was the cluster of flight and migration. And there in particular, the recommendation to ratify the International Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families. And since the review on Thursday was a discussion also with the members of the ministries, there was a reply actually from the Federal Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs, the BMAS, who said the convention is not compatible with German law. But in other cases, German law has been amended as well. So for civil society, that was clearly an example of lack of political will and resources. Yeah. A third issue, which Nicoletta also mentioned, was violence against women. It was recommended to increase shelter places for women to ensure the full implementation of the Istanbul Convention and also to label femicide as a crime. Civil society later explained that we are missing around 14,000 places, so shelter places, while the number of victims of domestic violence rose by 8.5% from 2021 to 2022. Poverty was also a big issue, but especially for children. So that has risen in recent years. As civil society also explained later, 1 in 5 children live in poverty in Germany, and in Berlin, even 1 in 3. Then also Nicoletta highlighted gender equality. It came up a lot to close the gender pay gap, which is around 18% at the moment, which is really high. It was recommended to have more women in positions of decision-making to improve the availability of childcare and dismantle gender stereotypes. And civil society also later highlighted that or criticized that there is no corresponding domestic feminist policy to the feminist foreign policy of Germany. Then another point which was mentioned particularly often is was persons with disabilities. So it was recommended to adopt a strategy for achieving a more inclusive education system. Older persons were in focus as well to ensure, for instance, sufficient number of caregivers for older persons. And it was also interesting to see that there is a clear connection now between climate and human rights. So climate was a big topic. Germany was recommended to enhance its climate action, to increase finances for loss and damage, adopt measures to drastically cut the carbon emissions to achieve the 1.5 degree, and to decarbonize the economy. And maybe in this line was also the responsibility of companies, which was underlined. It was highlighted that we should develop legislation to address the impact companies have, as companies abroad have on human rights in the specific country. And arms exports were mentioned in particular, due diligence, and that we shall make sure that weapons are not used against human rights and the IHL, like the International Humanitarian Law. And last but not least, human rights education in school. This I also found remarkable that this was recommended. But Germany was also applauded, actually. So we are moving in a positive direction. We were applauded for our big contributions to the Office of the High Commissioner, where we are fourth biggest donor at the moment with $21.3 million. Yeah, that were just some of the main topics.
Thank you very much for ending on a positive note, Sarah. I was just going to say that's a very, very long list. And as you said, I think it requires really a lot of political will. If I may, I have a quick follow-up question. You said that over the years, since the report in 2009, so to say, it's a general trend that more and more recommendations are being submitted. Can you say why that is? Is there a reason, or is that just like a group thing, like one country submits more and then all the others do as well? Maybe there's no clear answer for that, but I was just wondering whether you have an explanation for that.
I think maybe Nicoletta can is best positioned here.
Yes, let's see that this is a trend that we saw growing. If we compare the data from the first cycle with the second and the third, and now with the fourth cycle, and one of the let's say explanations that we try to give to this is the fact that states use the Universal Periodic Review more and more because as it puts it treats all the state equally, even states that are, let's say, that in other venues don't have the same political presence, they use the UPR to bring up their priorities, their foreign policies priorities. So we can see more and more small islands, states or small states that take the floor during the UPR. We see also if in the first and second cycle we could probably see some links between the state receiving the recommendation and the state formulating the recommendations, maybe because of historical, geopolitical, economical links. Now we see that many delegations, many permanent missions, they participate to the reviews of all the state, even if there has not been any connection, let's say, before. So we see it positively in the sense because more people, more members participate. We have a variety of issues that are raised. And so like this, we can, for example, address issues that are not so popular, maybe, because as we have so many entities participating, we have, let's say, a more complex situation that is given from the UPR.
Thank you very much for that explanation, Nicoletta. Yeah, Sarah, of course.
In line maybe with what Nicoletta said, it's also really important then to see and to take these recommendations serious. Like, even if they do not fit us in the first line, but it's also like if, for instance, the recommendations made by African states on the Convention on Migrant Workers, if we just dismiss it and say, yeah, it's not relevant, we should really like take it serious to a certain extent if we want to strengthen our connections with these countries.
It's a good way probably to address the criticism of double standards, right? So thank you very much also for that comment. I wanted to get back one more time to the case of Germany, since we're a German foundation. Nicoletta, with your extensive knowledge, also on the review of other states, as well as the previous reviews of Germany, how would you assess this year's review of Germany overall? And maybe most importantly, where do we go from here? What are the next steps? Maybe also for the listeners to know how to engage with the mechanism and how do you engage with it as an organization?
As Sarah also said before, through the UPR, it's true that we tend to highlight what are the challenges and the human rights situation in each country, but it's also an opportunity to share, like, the measures that have been taken to improve the human rights situation. So as Sarah also said before, Germany has shared some good practices during the UPR working group, including, for example, the development of an action plan to combat racism, the measures and efforts taken for the inclusion of refugees, and also, even if it was not for the same for the domestic level, but the guidelines, for example, for the feminist foreign and development policy were commended by the other states. And the other element that I would like to highlight is that Germany has conducted consultations at the national level before the review. So that is something very positive, consultations with civil society actors and also the consultations with the landers of the federal government. So that is something also very positive. So for the next step, what can be done next? So we have a few dates to keep in mind. So as Sarah also mentioned before, on Wednesday 15th, there will be at the preliminary adoption of the report of the UPR. That means that Germany has the possibility in that moment to already give preliminary responses to which recommendations to support, and that means which recommendations to commit, and so engage and implementing them. But there is also the possibility to keep the recommendations pending. And that's actually also positive, because that means that Germany will study those recommendations, analyze them, consult with the different entities at the national level, so the different landers, ministries at the federal level, to actually assess which recommendations can be implemented in the next 4 years and a half. So we need to wait a bit next week also to have the list, the full list of recommendations, because like this we can work on those. And that's where I also like to say that the UPR is a process, because the review is just one moment of the whole universal periodic review process. The final decision that will be given during the Human Rights Council session in March 2024. So Germany has these 4 months to decide on what recommendations to commit. And once that this decision is taken, civil society, national actors all have a role that they can play in contributing in the implementation of these recommendations. So Germany, the state will be responsible to implement the recommendations, because every state has the responsibility to protect, promote and fulfill human rights. But in other actors, civil society can follow up on those recommendations, can hold the government accountable of the commitments that it has taken in the framework of the UPR. So as UPR Info, during our activities, our capacity building activities, the events that we organize, we provide, skills, good practices on how all the different national actors can contribute, can work together to implement those recommendations, because civil society has an extensive expertise, for example, on specific human rights issues, and can provide very useful inputs to develop programs and policies or to integrate a human rights-based approach in the different development programs that are made. So we really encourage this working together efforts for the next 4 years and a half.
Well, thank you very much. So we know what to look out for. Next week, we will know what homework Germany has to do for the next 4.5 years, and what civil society can watch out for. Thank you very much to both of you, Nicoletta and Sarah, for giving us such valuable insights, and that you took the time to speak with me today. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning into this episode. And we would also like to thank you for your interest. And until next time, then with my colleague Marcel Schmidt. Goodbye.
Multipod, der Podcast der Konrad-Adenauer-Stiftung über internationale Zusammenarbeit.